bills that I hope we can successfully work through quickly today, but Representative Boucher, who has 308 in front of the committee, has a conflict and needs to go to another committee momentarily. And so I'm going to defer and allow Representative Boucher to give us a very brief presentation on House Bill 308 in hopes that we can move it along quickly.
My apologies to those of you who had come to testify. Senator, I'll get out real quick. It's just I want to, Senator Kelly is waiting for it, and he gets impatient. Simply stated, 308 is an act relating to voter registration. It's called the Motor Voter Bill. It's been recently enacted in Colorado, Arizona, and Michigan, and they have seen a sharp raise in their voter registration. One of the problems that election has is updating, changing the latest address, as we saw in several elections, simply because people aren't updated why their votes are thrown out. I have just talked to the Commissioner of Public Safety. One thing we don't want to do is create backup lines, but we feel if they had the form there, they can hand it to the person and they can step aside, just go over, register, and drop it in a box. It wouldn't have to stand there. And let's try it. If next year the thing doesn't work satisfactorily, why, we would go to elections and see what could be done. And in periods of rush, they could call elections and say, get a voter registrar over here. This is the first of the year, and we expect hundreds of people in here. And they could still offer them. The person could step aside when they get through registering the vehicle, go over, be registered to vote, drop it in the box. So I recognize that it would place an extra burden on them. They've been very cooperative, and I think this is something that could be helping both departments, and more important, Alaska has got a great record in voter registration and participation. We're ninth in the nation now. When I came here as Lieutenant Governor, we were 49th, but so that was the reason we introduced it, and I won't go into too much detail on it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Boucher? There are two people that wish to testify on this bill. Representative Boucher, do you want to stay here and quickly
yes,
ask
ma'am.
Some questions?
So can I ask them a question?
Certainly, go ahead. While you're asking a question, perhaps Linda Edgeworth could be coming to the table.
And did you have a chance to talk to DBI? Because they mentioned when I was working with Representative Gruenberg on his life-saving back of our cards to encourage people to allow for medical purposes, their hearts, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they said it's just taking too much time. They don't even remind you. I said, well, at least don't put the thing in plastic. Once they put it in plastic, you can't write on the back of it. So they were real negative to the aspect of taking an extra effort to allow people to fill out the back of the card to be laminated. Have they expressed anything to you?
Well, what I did is obviously a person is burdened with work. They've got their main thing. I believe in heading those things off. So I had a brief talk with the commissioner, and I said, hey, if it's a burden on you, I think that this is something. There are lots of people who are registrars who would love to come over to the Department of Motor Vehicles as an independent registrar and register people there. In fact, they would, if they came there and were doing it, they could get paid for doing it. Normally, obviously, the department would. So in rush periods, call up elections, have a registrar come over there and assist so it doesn't clutter up the line. But in routine days, I think the process could be handled. But I'll let them speak for themselves.
I don't mind trying it. I think the biggest thing that's helped with voter registration is our annual welfare checks. You know, there's things they call them to get that.
Well, this would be a perfect year to try it. It's prior, see how it works. It's not an election year. If it don't work, you gotta drop it. Or
is Linda Edgeworth here? How about Bill Brown from Division of Motor Vehicles?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bill Brown, Division of Vehicles, Department of Public Safety. The sponsor had some good suggestions in regards to the box there, who we didn't have to handle the people. At our preference at this time, of course, we do have voter registration in all of our offices except Anchorage and Fairbanks. We do also, of course, contract out mainly with police departments and some other locations, and at one location with a private concern. Of course, this bill says any time a license is issued, we shall offer them the right to register to vote. We have a little concern as far as the contract people, and also we do issue some by mail. Whether or not with the shell in the bill, we would have to offer the voter registration with the college students, military, or anybody that wants it by mail from down south and so forth. We would prefer, again, to have it status quo and accept the sponsor's recommendations of the box and do give it a try. Rather than make it law, maybe we could give it a try in the Anchorage and Fairbanks communities, which are the only two we don't do it in at this time, as far as state offices. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have in regards to it.
Are there any questions from Mr. Byrne?
Only that would people then have to be signed up at registrars. I guess the election will let us know there that we may have to officially have someone on there at the registrar.
Excuse me, may I respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
That is a technicality. Yeah. I think certainly if they're qualified to take driver's licenses, they could do that. I'd like to reverse it. I'd like to put it in law. Then if it don't work, I promise you, cross my heart, it'll back off or I'll go get the extra funds. But just so we could go on record as, you know.
Anything else for Mr. Brown? Thank you very much.
And may I, the first thing I want to do is elections give you all the help possible, especially this year. It's an off season. They'll have a municipal one to run, and there would be some opportunity for interchange. And if it don't work, as I was telling Art, hey, I'll be the first to come over and find out why. You can hold me personally responsible, and obviously I'll be in Anchorage, I hope.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
Other testimony on House Bill 308, Mr. Michael Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michael D. Mann. I'm employed by the Southeast Alaska Community Action Program here in Juneau. Community Action Program represents approximately 21 communities in southeastern Alaska. And we, by mandate, represent the interests of low-income populace throughout the area that we serve. Most of the times, our charter forbades us to be involved in political activities, but I'm here to say that this is one of the few exceptions. We promote the registration of as many qualified Alaskan voters as possible. We encourage the participation in the democratic process every 2, 3, or 4 years, or whenever it comes along. And we endorse the bill that's been endorsed that, or has been in, submitted by Representative Boucher that would allow people to register for vote at the time of driver's license registration.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, one final point, I think the most important thing. When your driver's license expires, you come. When you change residence for voting, it's usually the last thing you do. I think the people, if they take off from work to go to the get, it increases the chances. At least that's why it is.
Any other discussion? Could I have a motion for
Two things. I think, as I said before, permanent funds have been checked and encouraged to people. And then also, now that we have a 2-year purge system, that has significantly increased people with proper address and stuff like that. This may help, but I think the two major things have already been done. Now, you also mentioned you want a sunset date on this, because once we put it in, as mayor, you won't be able to be down here to change it.
Thank you. I am assured you, if the thing is lousy, you got my word.
No. Nixon gave me his word, too.
I will be back. Nixon did, but I'm not Nixon.
Representative Boucher, Linda Edgeworth did sign up to testify from the Division of Elections. She has apparently stepped away. I would like to reserve this bill and bring it up later when Linda arrives so we can hear from elections before we pass it out, because there isn't another committee of the room. So we'll come back to this bill when Linda returns to the committee. Okay, the next bill before us then is Senate Bill 173. Senator Ewing is with us. Would you join us at the table, please? Representative Ewing, thank you for joining us, and thanks for your patience.
Thank you very much. The bill before you has wound its way all the way through the Senate and over to the House. Essentially, what we're looking at, I've been a proponent of the community school program for the last 3 or 4 years, and what we're looking at right now is a decrease in the funding for community schools. It's gone away from something like $4.2 million statewide 3 years ago, down to about $2 million last year. Now, in the budget this year, we're down statewide with the Senate figure at about $1 million. And I believe the House is in, and we're in conference committee at $822,000. Essentially, what this would allow would be a checkoff on the permanent fund, on your permanent fund dividend application, and essentially would allow you to check off $5. I know there are other bills that are coming over that are on permanent fund dividend checkoffs. All of those have been set, as I understand, at $5. Over on the Senate State Affairs Committee, they set them all so that they were equal. I realize there's other bills coming along down the pike. Essentially, the Olympics had the opportunity of raising about $700,000, and I will, the Department of Revenue is here also to testify on how much money was garnished, how much money was actually collected from the other program, which is the Special Olympics. This would raise about $400,000 to maybe $500,000, depending on how many actual dividend checkoffs we do have this year. And I'd be glad to answer any questions, and Mr. Jones is here, and there may be other people that are here to testify on it also.
Are there any questions?
Senator, the only question I have, since we have so many, and I think it's just getting to be logical rather than the committee show favoritism from one cause or another. I think this is probably the 23rd or 24th recommendation, and we talked about it before, just allow one bill with all these things on it if we're going to do it at all. And if we pick the various pieces of legislation, and some other people have had their bill here for about 3 months on the House side, they're still saying, well, when you want to pass something out, they see the Senate bill coming. I think we're to the point of making one bill with all 23 or 24 checkoffs.
I think if I can respond through the chair, that of course has been talked about by people on, I'm sure, both sides of the body. One of the things I think it's going to be difficult to do, since there are differing views depending on the senator or the representative, that everybody is interested in probably their own specific thing, and it's like, well, if we combine them all into one bill, it doesn't give the opportunity for somebody to really push for the cause that they really want. The Department of Revenue, and Mr. Jones is here also to state how they'll be handled when they do get over to the Department of Revenue, and how they will actually fit onto the permanent fund dividend application sheet.
Previously in this committee, we've heard many checkoffs, House bills primarily, not Senate bills yet, and we had thought about trying to put them all into one bill here in this committee, but some of the bills didn't get referred to State Affairs, they went to pass, and so it's been a little confusing. And so I guess the fallback position is that somewhere in finance.
there's about three or four in finance right
yes,
now.
Yes, that may roll them into one, like it or not, just to kind of put them all into some form that makes sense not only for the Department of Revenue, but for the individual applicant as well. But it's probably not going to happen here. It will happen
you're
somewhere
finance,
else.
Right?
I'm trying to do it.
Speaking of House Finance.
House Finance, yeah.
Oh, it's Senate.
Any other questions for Senator Ewing?
Senator Ewing, it appears to me that community schools, and having served on the school board years ago in Kodiak, we started community schools during that time, it appears to me that it's pretty much a local issue as well. So my question is, how will your bill distribute the amount that will go to the different community schools? would community school checkoff people in Anchorage be paying for a community school in a community that didn't contribute much?
It would essentially go into the pool that they have right now. If you went back and saw how much actually was in there 3 or 4 years ago, it was something like $4 million. Now we're down to something like $1 million. In the case of an individual school district, they can put in a matching amount of money. However, this would be a pool that would be distributed among the, I don't know, 40-some schools, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, or more schools, community schools statewide. It's probably the easiest way to handle it. Otherwise, we get into so much segmentation out of it.
Would there be a way that the department could keep the amount that was checked off in individual school districts to go to that school district?
I don't know. We could probably check with them. It might be get a little bit too confusing, but they might.
It just seems to me that if a community is willing to support a community schools program, and I do view this as a very local kind of issue, because even within Anchorage, I would suspect that certain community school programs in different areas of the city would be a little stronger than other areas. I just wonder how we could maybe work on language to ensure that those who honestly wanted community schools, in fact, and put their money where their vote was, in fact, are the ones that got the money.
Representative
Badger. The thing that I really like about this particular piece of legislation is this shows a little bit of imagination to replace income that's currently being taken away. It's a small school tax. And then in my district, community schools really play a tremendous role. I mean, they provide that education for maybe the person that doesn't want to go to ACC or an educational opportunity. And I'd be less concerned, because I think you really get these body of people saying, come on now, contribute, you got a chance to check. So you got a building sales force. And it just may be that they would come through with a significant amount of money, and it could be a part of making it truly a local process. There'd be a little arguing about who got what money or what have you, but they've allocated pretty fairly. I like, you know, other ones as a checkoff for a brand new, some of them, it just checkoff for another giveaway. This is saying, all right, this is the small income tax bill. You get everybody checking off $5 or $10. I think it's very imaginative, and I commend you on it. I know what a valuable role they play, especially in the area in which I live.
Well, I would, in response to Representative Davidson's question, I think the best thing would be that if the local school district wanted to go ahead and add money to it or something, the formula should really stay as equitable and fair as it is right now. And then, of course, if they want to raise money locally through private sources and so on, they could, of course, match that money in. But we have tried to keep it as simple as possible, and we really appreciate keeping it that way.
I think it's a neat
bill. Representative Martin.
We used to, in 74 up to 79, and in 80 they kind of stopped at that, and any grants or loans had to be supported by maybe 10% or 25% to show that they were local interest. But this is one way that we may find out how much true real interest there is for the Mickey Mouse Club or Donald Duck Club, whatever you want to call it. And then when they find out that after all this legislation they got out the dollars and checks, then legislators may see how much people really feel out of their hearts. But I also want to express one thing to the senator and anyone else. I feel very certain that if any of these bills gets on that floor, it's going to be amended for every other one institution.
Well, I would, Madam Chair, I would speak strongly for this, and I think the argument that I just made, this is supplementing existing revenues, giving people an opportunity. Maybe that would begin to separate. I feel this is passed.
Would you argue if I amended it with the girls and boys club of Alaska?
I guess we'll have to face that one.
I guess
one last question. The Alaska Association for Community Education, has there been any response from them on this bill? Have any of the community school organizations along the way in the Senate testify on this bill?
Yes, I believe so. Dave, did you have some information?
They support the bill that they have. It's very difficult for community school people, especially in Anchorage, to afford a plane ticket to come and, as you know, and testify.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that there's been some communication
with
them. Oh, absolutely. We have communicated with them, yes.
Okay.
We have a letter here to Representative Ellis from one of the people in Inlet View, Madam Chair, which essentially is in support of it, of the bill, and I've got a copy of that on file.
Okay. Any other questions for Senator Ewing?
Well, Madam Chair, I would just like to say, coming from a district that only has a community school, I would support this legislation and feel that whatever revenues we can get into would be good.
That's right. You got it.
Good. There's one more person who wishes to testify on this bill, Mr. Irvin Jones from the Department of Revenue. So I'd like to call on you at this time. And
thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Ewing, for being with us.
Have a real cozy little room.
It is cozy. We have a lot of work done here because of the situation. We have a close working relationship, which is required. Mr. Jones.
For the record, my name is Irvin Jones, Director of Admin Services, Department of Revenue. First, I'd like to say I'm a graduate of community schools. I think they're a wonderful institution here in the state of Virginia, where I graduated. The Department of Revenue has testified before on many of these bills, both in the Senate and the House, and I'd like to say that our only concern with this particular bill, 173, and with the other two bills that we have before the committee today, they're similar to it, is the fact that the Senate Finance Committee has moved bills, as Senator Ewing knows, without fiscal notes passed. We're very concerned about that because we recognize that there is a fiscal impact to this, any of this program. I'd like to offer the committee the thought that the HB 246, which is a composite bill that includes community school grant fund and each of the other two bills that are up before you today, prompted us to perform the kind of testing that I suggested at my last appearance before this committee we would do. We have used 900 live applications and processed those applications for the normal routine, and then we have amended them, adjusted them for a pro forma checkoff. And we used percentages that were provided to us by the United Way of Alaska, which has a lot of experience in fundraising, and we had multiple choices. Applying those percentages, which we felt to be the most valid thing available to the Department of Revenue, and putting it, and running all of these 900 applications through the process, we were able to prepare a more accurate fiscal note for HB 246 that would reflect the cost to the department, we believe, of doing either 7 checkoffs, which is what was on the bill at that time, now there are 8, we believe 10 or 12 checkoffs. We don't really feel the cost is going to go up beyond that. Just for information, that total cost, we estimate to be $70,000 in the startup year and $53,000 continuing. I know that's been a concern both to Senate Finance and to the House committees, that we've been putting in fiscal notes of about $30,000 for each one of these bills. This is the first time we've had the opportunity to present numbers on multiple checkoffs. So that's something we weren't able to provide to Senate Finance, and I think partly as a result of that, they decided to pass the bills with fiscal notes. That would be our only concern, and I guess beyond that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the administration of the program or anything else.
Are there any questions for Mr. Jones?
Representative Miller. Just not to miss it, but as a point of information, we had checkoffs on the previous year permanent fund.
The only one was this last year. It's the Winter Olympics.
And generated how much?
165,000 people would be about 830. I think it's about $830,000 total.
Senator,
you
I have $765,050. But I was also going to mention real briefly here that the Senate Finance Committee's intent is that depending on how many bills pass, they do plan to fund them with a fiscal note, depending on how many bills pass. That was brought up, and I think that's why they left it as it was, depending on how many came across.
In the absence of the kind of information that we
have
there. Any other questions for Mr. Jones?
One other thing, Madam Chairman, with that then, can we forward discuss the finance metric? Forward them the fiscal notes, so it may save them time
yes.
Having to wait I know it's going to be the minute to hell when it gets on the floor, but you know, stuff is mine.
Madam Chair.
Anything else, Mr. Jones?
Just one thing. Representative Davis asked a question earlier about the breakout by community schools and that sort of thing. Without regard to whether it's a good idea or not, it would be entirely possible for revenue to provide zip code breakdowns to the Department of Education if that were between part of those, so that they could distribute the monies in some fashion as well to the way they would contribute. That would be readily available.
Do you have any idea what the fiscal on that might be?
We'd do it for free. No, that would be, actually just be running an easy tree program on the file. It would be, you know, 20 minutes.
Madam Chair, I would like to get Senator Ewing's opinion on the distribution by zip code. Would that
something we can look at?
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Any other testimony on Senate Bill 173? What's the committee's wishes? Representative Bernard?
Madam Chair, I would like to move out SB 173 with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Representative Davidson?
We did. I was wondering if we could put a letter of intent about the zip code thing or how we can expand on.
I think there are a couple of options. One would be a letter of intent, which would be fine with me if that's the wish of the committee. Another possibility would be between now and the time this bill is heard in the Finance Committee for you and Senator Ewing to perhaps work out some language that might be offered to the Finance Committee as a possible CS. But we could do both.
Senator Ewing, do you think this idea is worth pursuing? Because
well, yeah, let's look. I mean, let's do some checking on it, see what we can do on it. We can look at it up in Finance.
I have no objection to moving the bill.
Okay. I move the bill move out with individual recommendations.
It has been moved, and I'll assume that, that means you're a yes vote. And if
oh,
there are
yes,
no
I
objections,
am.
Then Senate Bill 173
great idea.
Moves with individual
shows
recommendations.
That the Senate is beginning to get some of the brilliance of the House over there. Well, look at where he and Binkley are. I mean, that's a problem.
Okay, Senate Bill 180 is the next bill before us. It is an act relating to contributions for permanent fund dividends for the World Eskimo Indian Olympics. Let's see, who is here on Senate Bill 180? Is there anyone here representing Senator Bennett or any of the other senators who have sponsored Senate Bill 180?
Madam Chair?
They were expecting a phone call. Okay. Judy Crandall?
Yes?
Would you mind calling with Senator Bennett, Senator Hensley's office?
I'd like to testify on behalf
of Representative Davidson.
Linda Edgeworth's here, ma'am. I mean,
all right, well, we're waiting for Senator Hensley's person to arrive. Let's hear from Linda. Linda, we took up House Bill 308 earlier, and if you join us, please, and give us your comments on 308.
Where do you want that mark?
We will come back to Senate Bill 180 as soon as Senator Hensley marks. We can call you if you'd like. Okay.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Linda Edgeworth from the Division of Elections, and House Bill 308 is obviously a bill that we support. We, frankly, for several years have already provided the Department of Motor Vehicles and the Department of Public Safety voter registration forms, and they have been providing that service. If there is any reservations about this bill, certainly there will be no fiscal impact on the Division of Elections. If there is anything, it is my understanding from the Department of Public Safety that their only concern is that the bill might be amended to indicate in offices, motor vehicle offices operated by the state. There are a lot of private contractors and subcontractors used by the Department of Public Safety elsewhere in the state, that it might be a burden that we would be imposing on municipal officials or private contractors. An additional responsibility above those that they're already providing in the licensing of drivers. And it is my understanding that the sponsor has no objection to amending this to indicate those motor vehicle offices operated by the state offices. We found our relationship with public safety in this area very cooperative, and we've been doing it for quite some time. If anything, we're concerned about our job service offices, in which we used to have a relationship, but with the state budget cuts and all of their money coming from the federal, I guess being supported by federal funds, we have now been told that they can no longer provide voter registration services because the federal government won't allow them to. So we are losing an access to voter registration for, I think, a very important target group, newcomers to the state, many oftentimes lower-income individuals who we want to outreach to. So we support this kind of legislation with that recommendation.
Any questions from said group?
Linda, where would it be good to, we just have a second and...
Do you have some specific language to propose?
I had assumed that perhaps the Department of Public Safety representative might make that same recommendation, although I'm not sure that he's...
They've been and gone.
So I think that it would be the person applying for a driver's license was 18 years old. After online 15 after a driver's license at a state-operated motor vehicle office, something to that effect would be simple enough to restrict it. They also do a lot of by-mail driver's license activity in a lot of rural communities and or from out-of-state people who want to maintain their driver's license, military people out-of-state. And so those are the kinds of limitations that I guess the Department of Public Safety is worried about. There's some contacted by mail operations.
Okay. Unless the committee has any objections, what I would just like to do is conceptually adopt this amendment and allow legal services to put in this concept where they feel it is appropriate. The concept being that it is a requirement only in motor vehicle offices operated by the state, and allow legal services to insert that where they think it's appropriate. Representative Martin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. Linda, I had one question pertaining to would you have to qualify the people who will do this at the department? Is because they register people for driver's license, that one thing, but did have to qualify them?
We already provide training and training manuals to those.
Already done.
Yes, and then each of the registrations they provide is evaluated and rejected if we have to. Then we deal directly with the voter if there's a problem with an incomplete form or whatever.
Any other discussion on 308? Representative Donovan.
Was there already some testimony by motor vehicles as to how much it costs? And they didn't provide a fiscal note?
None.
In the state-operated offices, they're already providing a service, not as affirmatively as I think is suggested by this bill, which, you know, perhaps is the major issue in this bill, is making an affirmative requirement rather than just having a sign up. And if the applicant happens to ask for a voter registration form, then facilitating the process.
I don't know what you're thinking about.
I think this bill is a great idea, but I'm just shocked that...
Your insurance.
Yeah, they don't like mandatory auto insurance, so they hang a massive fiscal note on that. And this is a wonderful idea also, but they don't even bother to submit one for this one.
Representative Donnelly, they didn't indicate enthusiastic support. They basically said that they would prefer if the bill not passed, that they continue to do it in a permissive, voluntary manner, but that if Representative Boucher promised that if it didn't work out, she introduce a bill to repeal it, which she did, yeah. And they'd sort of go along with it.
That's right. Now, there's two things. Let's say, for example, it's a rush day. It's the first of the year or something. Pick up the telephone and call elections and say, could you send a registrar down here to assist our staff? Somebody would come down there, sit there, make 50 cents, and pump them in the box, right, Linda?
Well, we certainly try to do that.
That's right.
Actually, so, with a 38% budget cut, we're short-staffed.
I'm talking about you keep a list of ladies that are home that would like to pick it up and say, okay, you're next volunteer.
Good money.
That's
right.
Hey, I
certainly support that.
Volunteer registrar. Sure.
Any other discussion? If not, can we have a motion, please?
Yes, ma'am.
I move HB 308 out with individual recommendations.
With the proposed conceptual amendment.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Without any objections, it moves. Senator Hensley has joined us. Thank you, Ann. Come to the table. I believe you have two bills before us, Senator Hensley. Senate Bill 108 and Senate Bill 156.
I do?
I believe so.
Well, Madam Chairman, I thought I had only one, but if the other one is good one, I'll take it too.
Senate Bill 180 is actually by Bennett, Coghill, Farrington, and Hensley.
Yes.
And there is no one here from Senator Bennett's office, to the best of my knowledge, so if you don't mind speaking to that bill in addition to Senate Bill 156, we could do both at the same time. Okay?
Well, thank you, Madam. Mine is 156.
Which one would you like to take first?
156.
Okay, Senate Bill 156 first.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I had introduced this bill initially requesting a $25 contribution because I thought that was minuscule enough, but as it turns out, the suggestion that a $5 contribution from the permanent fund dividend to the party of person's choice was recommended, so I'm going along with that. And Madam Chairman, I've been involved in the Democratic Party over the years, twice as party chairman, and it seems that the parties generally survive from one cocktail party or barbecue to the next, and I thought this might afford a means by which the major political parties could sustain themselves on a sort of a continuous basis. And even though this sum might be paid out once a year, still I think they could borrow money in the interim contingent on receipt of these funds if they so desired. It's purely an option on the individual's part as to whether they want to contribute these funds. And I had some information on from both the major political parties, both the chairman are supporting the bill, and I would urge passage of the legislation.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, Senator, every time the Democratic Party comes up with a great idea for raising the money, it's the Republicans that make all the money. That last great thing you gave to the state Republicans was the political contribution credit. We outdid you 10-1 with these. You know,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, this is a good way here, but I'm going to ask each person the same question. There's about 22 or 24 bills in our committee now with everything and anything. Now, if we should support this political contribution first above all these other mother and apple pie issues, we know that bills are going to be attacked with amendments. Would you mind if other amendments would be put on to it for other purposes? We have so many of them.
Well, of course, I would expect a clean piece of legislation on this issue. What you want with the others.
You're going to say, why did you bring this one first, the political contributions? Man, we want that to be eased in between motherhood and children.
Next question. What's wrong with that?
Madam Chairman, this is one, one thing I've noticed about the respective parties, and I've known, I work very closely with the chairman of the Republican Party on some issues where we agreed, but our party loves to give parties, but generally speaking, by the time we have a great time, we end up losing money. But on the other hand, I feel that, you know, if this tool is available, that it gives both the parties an opportunity to make use of it, and I think it's worthy of consideration. On the other one, I go on.
That's all?
No, I was just going to say and tell the senator that, on these, I think it's a good piece of legislation. I would go ahead and support it. I was just going to tell him that we operate a little differently over on the House side, is that we don't have to come to the table with a pocket full of money here.
You can always tell the Republicans. He knows where it's at.
No, it's fine.
He knows how to make Republicans talk.
Adding a little bit of color today. colorful day.
I don't have any bills over the Senate.
Well, you're going to move the bill?
I move bill with individual recommendation.
One second. Representative Davidson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hensley, would there be any problem including other political parties? Would we be at legal risk by excluding other political parties?
I think we had a sort of a cutoff in the bill where you had to have a certain percentage of the last general election. So if there is a significant political party gaining, I think, 3% of the vote or something, then they would be eligible for that.
That recognized by the Commission of Election.
Anything else, Mr. Davidson? Yeah,
no, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Jones, do you have anything to add to this bill other than what you've already placed in place?
No.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, your motion is now.
Yes, ma'am.
I assume that means Representative Boucher would.
Yes, ma'am. Move it out with individual recommendations.
Okay, without objection, then.
We got to move some of these Senate bills through here.
Without objection, it is moved. Senator Hensley, the other bill, which is Senate Bill 180, which is the contributions from the World Eskimo Indian Olympics. Would you mind speaking briefly?
Yes, ma'am. Chairman, the Eskimo Indian Olympics has been around for, I don't know, 20 years or more. And it is virtually an institution in the interior and also for the rest of the state. It's a major attraction in the summertime. And Senator Bennett and his delegation from the interior thought it was a very good idea, as I did also, to recommend that as a item for people to make a judgment on as to whether they felt their $5 was worth contributing to an event.
Any questions?
I have a comment. I attended one of the first Indian Eskimo Olympics in the dormitory. Attended in Kodiak, and I can attest to the cultural value as well as the value of the individual participants. I think it's a worthy cause, and I would urge favorable recommendation of this legislation.
Is that a motion to move it out of committee?
That is a motion.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Without any additional discussion, Senate Bill 180 also moves to committee. Thank you, Senator Hensley.
I was going to just do a little bit of some of the games that I used to
No,
do.
You don't have to do that, please.
In order to get the bill out.
We got some more Senate bills.
Good to kickball.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You think you could do that, Billy?
Well, actually, I have another one that's almost nobody here could do, I know. In fact, in the whole legislature. No.
Knuckleball?
Any thoughts on when we're going home?
Hey, what game is that in? Is that the Wilson?
We're trying to train them, though.
We're having sort of a fun day here. It's amazing how this committee gets more interesting when the senators come to the table.
That's right.
Loosened up here.
You see the way they operate over there.
Senate Bill 201, I believe, is the next on our agenda. Is there someone here representing Senator Josephson?
Madam Chair, I think we should give some
yes?
merit.
Hey,
you know, in lieu of the salary raises, here possibly we could give a permission to every legislator introduce one of these checks.
I had to talk.
You saved the state a lot of money.
Well, that bears a little additional.
But we might only get $5
for it.
That's what I'm worried about.
Is that good?
Okay, let's bring this back to order again. Senate Bill 201.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Finkelstein. I apologize for Senator Joseph not being here. He's trying to run between two Senate committees right now. The bill that we have, Senate Bill 201, is an attempt to try to make more all-inclusive the agriculture and fisheries product preference that's now in the books. To put it in a real brief light, the law now has two different preferences that exist. One is the agriculture and fisheries product preference that Senator Curtula put into law last year. Another one is the one Senator Fakes put into effect, the procurement code. That has its own product preference for Alaska products. That is not scheduled to go into effect until 1987, and there's other legislation that affects the effective date of that one. What this bill does is amends the existing local agriculture and fisheries product preference to give a 7% preference and to make clear that it applies to municipalities. Beyond that, it also clears up some ambiguity as to which of these two sections applies to agricultural and fisheries products. I think vesting is just, I can answer any questions if anyone had it.
Are there any questions? Representative Mark.
If, I was wondering if the Senator, if your staff has had any inquiry that would be most knowledgeable when the worst thing for suffering is a dairy product.
Classified in agricultural products is because it isn't an obvious member of the group. But dairy products and other agricultural products clearly would be in the definition.
Do we have that definition in the back?
There is a definition of agricultural products on the bottom of page one, but it doesn't specifically say dairy products.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Well, David, do you think the Senator would mind if we
include that? No, of course not, but we have been told by the administration that it is in their definition, in their mind included. It's just an agricultural product, I mean, how else to say it?
Madam Chairman, so that it won't be in the guessing game after the fact, I'd like to recommend that we specifically put dairy products, agriculture dairy products.
I guess line 26 says,
yes, ma'am.
Agricultural products.
And dairy products.
Includes dairy products, mm-hmm. And includes timber and lumber.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I don't have any objections to that if you're quite certain that your senator wouldn't have any objections.
Oh, no, that would be fine. I realize I should point out, too, that there is a committee substitute, too. It should be in everyone's packet. The only difference, though, is it has a technical amendment, which wasn't made at Senate. It's online.
Yeah, we have the committee, sir.
Right. No, it's this one behind it. Next one there.
Oh,
that one there. On page 2, line 26, it's just a technical amendment taking out some mistaken references in the application clause.
The proposed CS dated May 11th.
Yes, that's it.
All right, I guess Representative Martin, then it would be appropriate to move a new House CS, including the dairy
yes,
products.
Yes,
so I'll interpret
the I'd like to object to the amendment.
Okay, Representative Davidson.
I feel that it would be redundant, and I think it's important to keep the language as simple and straightforward as possible in these kinds of things. And if agricultural products do not include milk and elastic cows, maybe find cow and milk and agricultural products.
Madam Chairman, I take his point of view very seriously because I know before that sometimes when you have a general term that we thought, oh, that would do it, especially in the medical field and the field of providers of services. But time and time again we found out that someone along the administration line said, well, no, it says this here and we interpret this as meaning this. We're finding ourselves having to be more explicit than what we did mean. I think now's a good time to put dairy products in there rather than someone getting hung up later and saying that don't mean agriculture.
Representative
Davis.
Well, does this mean then that we also put hay products because we want to feed musk ox? Or, I mean, I think anything that is harvested and products manufactured in the state, I think it specifically implies agricultural products. And I don't see that in this instance that there is a loophole for misunderstanding. I think perhaps if you're talking about naturopath or something like that, such as we've discussed on the floor, I can understand that, Representative Martin. But I don't think that, I don't think there is any question here, but that anything that is harvested as an agricultural product in the state is obviously covered in this section.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion, Representative Delman?
Sorry, different subject.
Okay, Representative Martin has moved including dairy products on line 26. An objection has been noted. Could I ask all of those who would like to include dairy products to please say aye? Two members?
Aye.
Pardon?
I don't have an opinion.
Well,
think that it needs to be covered is the important point. I guess I would just as soon go with the sponsor or the proposed House CS from the sponsor of the bill, Senator Josephson, and leave open the question for a possible floor amendment after we have consulted with legal services on a possible way of defining it, if anyone there believes that there's a way to do it without creating more problems. Okay. Okay. All right.
See, Mike.
Another issue that
maybe I'm missing this, Dave, but the section where agricultural products is defined is here, line 26, is paragraph 1. That's the only place where it's defined? I don't know if other places in the statutes, but in regard to 3615050, that's...
Right, so it just says it includes timber and lumber harvested in the state. That doesn't even sound like agricultural products to me. It seems like if you want to do a definition, why aren't we talking about all the farm products that are typically agriculture also, like, you know, radishes and carrots?
I'll send on the app just to offer my best explanation. Again, I think agricultural products, just by the dictionary definition, includes all those. What we tried to do here, and this is actually now you're looking at existing law. This is not an effect of this bill. This is just what the law now says.
Mm-hmm.
The reason in 1986 Senator Petula said it specifically includes timber and lumber was so that they would be added to it. There's a question, it's open to interpretation whether timber and lumber are agriculture. And some people call them separate things, but clearly radishes and cows are agricultural products.
It seems to me if that's the case, then it'd be better to say, it'd be better amendment would be something to the effect that includes but is not limited to, and then you'd know that you're using another definition, because the way this is written in statute now, it would imply to me, if I was a judge reading it, I could almost read that that's all it meant. And if that isn't what we mean, we ought to be a little more specific there. And I don't think just saying includes dairy products cuts it. I think it ought to say includes but is not limited to, and then if you're trying to get to
vegetable fruits.
But I don't think you have to list all those things. I think you just have to explain that by mentioning timber and lumber, you're not being exclusive of other things that are agricultural products. I don't know. That's why I've got a problem with, you know, moving things now, because I think it needs a little bit of work. Then I got one more question, and this is just the 7% number. My understanding is this is, does your office have any particular rationale for the 7% number?
7% comes out of the procurement code. Right now, in existing law, there's a 7% preference for local forest products in 3633.22.
Right, this is my understanding, but we're just going to continue the existing preference here, we're not, right?
Well, we extend it to
right.
agricultural and fishery products besides forest products, and we extend it to purchasing by municipalities or school districts.
Right. Okay. I wish someday, somewhere, we could get the bureaucracy to do some work on coming up with some backup evidence for what would be a reasonable preference level. If I was governor and I had the entire state administration in my command, I'd be doing some work in that area instead of leaving us out there on the edge of a cliff every time something gets litigated in court. I would have my people, you know, coming up with some reason for the numbers, because I certainly think that this is a wonderful program. It deserves our support, but we ought to just not do it in the blind. If we're going to do it, we ought to have some people out there working to come up with the basis to support it if it ever gets contested, so we don't lose it for no good reason other than we just didn't do our job. And I know this proposal is a great proposal. It's merely expanding existing law, and the 7% is an existing law. But I wish that I wish there was some evidence somewhere that we could put in some findings of fact why the 7% was a good idea, so we could give it to a court. And I know it's not, I'm not talking to you, I guess I'm just speaking
on the record that I wish the administration would, or in past administrations, would get off their duff and do something in this area. They're always putting us out to dry when things come to a contest.
I would like to move this bill from committee, but I would also like to improve the definition slightly. I'd like to just suggest that we take a 2-minute at ease, and I'm going to call the legal draftsman and come up with something, and if you can wait with us to make sure that it's all right. Is there anyone else that came to testify on Senate Bill 201?
Okay.
We would, just Madam Chair, anything you choose is fine, but we would be happy with the language Representative Donnelly suggested, but not limited to.
2 minutes at ease. Back to order after our at ease. After consulting with Tam Cook, her comment was basically if the committee is concerned that a particular thing, like dairy products, might not easily be understood, that it doesn't really do any harm to put that in, as long as we don't try and list everything and then run the risk of excluding something. And she also said that it didn't really matter whether we had it or didn't have it, but not limited to. But we could do agricultural products includes, but is not limited to, dairy products, comma, timber and lumber, et cetera, et cetera. So if that is the emerging consensus, that is the motion. Is there any objection to that? If there's not any objection, we'll...
Well, I'll object then.
Representative Davidson is still objecting. Okay. All those in favor of adopting the amendment, please raise your hand. All those opposed, please raise your hand. Okay. The amendment is adopted. And we have some other technical amendments which are in this House CS. Could I have a motion to adopt the House CS?
So moved, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Is there any objection to adopting the House CS? Okay. Without objection, then, we have adopted House CS 201. And I would appreciate it if you would check this with the sponsor to make certain that Senator Josephson doesn't have any problems. And if he does, perhaps we can still fix it. Thank you very much.
You.
Okay. Senate Bill 227. Senator Ewing.
I think it just all sort of happened. It all happened on one day, I think, even.
Wouldn't I fix that?
You're trying to be nice. You're doing very well. Bill? I don't mean that sarcastically. I really mean that sincerely.
Okay.
The bill before you is one that has to do with the claims of state agencies to the permanent fund dividends. And Dr. Romsford will be here also to testify on this, as will Becky Bear from Commerce and other people from different departments. What this allows is a garnishment on permanent fund dividends checks to satisfy the non-payment of debt to an agency. Right now, we have something like $41 million in student loans which are in default, which means they're past the 90 days or the 120 days. And presently, they're going through court proceedings to be able to collect that money. They did do a trial run to find out how many people were on the list for student loans and on the list for permanent fund dividends. Found a slippage, I believe, of 800 to 1,200 people who were essentially on the permanent fund dividend list received a check, but however were in serious default on their student loan. What this bill would do would allow the state agency to be able to collect a garnishment of the amount of money on a permanent fund dividend check to help repay the student loan or whatever kind of a debt that agency might have. And it could essentially raise an additional $400,000 to $800,000 in additional revenue each year just for the student loan program. And Dr. Romford will be here to speak on that. It just didn't seem equitable for individuals to receive a permanent fund dividend check when they are in default on a debt to a state agency. The bill takes steps to remedy that inequity, and that's essentially it. And in fact, the bill was introduced April 16, 1987. And I had no idea that there would be so much support on it. We've got calls from all over the state on the bill on ways to help with our present revenue situation. It goes a long way from, it's a long shot, but it's a help in that direction. There is also provision that was put in on the recommendation of the Department of Revenue, which allows for a 10-day hearing, a 10-day grace period, and then a hearing for a debt. but really the amount of money that could be raised from this could be in the excess of $2 or $3 million and even as much as 10. And our basic thing is that we're essentially handing out checks out here, and then we're letting people get away with murder on the other hand, and letting these things go into default by a significant amount. So I would be glad to answer questions, but there are people here that have filed the bill and are really hep on it and interested in it. I'll let them speak.
Any questions for Senator Ewing at this time? Why don't you just join us at the
Sure.
table here? We'll have the additional testimony, and maybe we'll have some other questions for Mary Rumsford.
Oh, could I ask Senator Ewing?
Sure.
Sure.
Senator, let me just, I don't know these statute citations right offhand. Is this just working with the existing court system where you have to get a judgment, and then you execute on the judgment to obtain the dividend? Or is this a shortcut? Or
it's a shortcut, isn't it, Carrie? What, Carrie can maybe answer that.
I'm Carrie Rumsford, Director of the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. The latter part is correct. This shortcuts it. Right now, we have access, as do other state agencies, to attach the permanent fund dividend, but it does take a court order. And for instance, what Senator Ewing referred to earlier, this last year we had 2,000 individuals that matched that were in default, and we could only get 800 of them. 1,200 successfully got their permanent fund dividends before we could get through the courts to get an attachment on those. So this does shortstop that, and what it says is that we would file a claim with the department for those individuals that are in default, and the department then would hold the permanent fund check, would not disperse it, would instead notify the individual that the claim had been made against their permanent fund dividend on our behalf, and the individual would have the opportunity to appeal that, which takes care of the due process problem that we ran into when we talked about a similar bill about a month and a half ago. It gives them the due process by affording them the opportunity to object and to give them a hearing on it. If they don't object, or if the hearing is unsuccessful, then that money would be transferred to us, and we wouldn't have to go through the court judgment.
So this bill doesn't address the issue we addressed in those other pieces of legislation about somebody just simply doesn't file for their dividend, it wouldn't be available for a state agency to claim.
That's correct.
And does this bill provide the entire dividend would be subject to the claim?
Yes, up to the amount of the debt. That's correct.
Does anybody have a position on that? Because in prior legislation, this committee has addressed the issue of if you take somebody's dividend, they know you're going to take it, they just don't bother to file for it, and the money just sits there, doesn't go for this purpose.
Through the chair. Representative Donnelly, that question has been raised, and there really was no good solution. You may recall that it was also raised when the committee was looking at doing a similar thing for incarcerated persons and giving the Department of Corrections the ability to apply on behalf of those individuals. And then the question was raised, would we be able to do the same thing? And we'd have no way of knowing who's a resident, who's not, because they're not quite the captive audience that the prisoners are. So there's no good way of getting around it. If the person won't apply, they just won't apply. But we're in fact, if you'll notice the fiscal impact note that if it's in there that I attached, the first year we figured we'd get about 600 to almost 700,000. The second year and from there on, I dropped it down to about 300,000 because I think that's the very thing that will happen. People won't bother to apply. But some will, and any that do, then by golly, we can get a hold of that money and apply it toward their indebtedness on their student loan, reduce the indebtedness to the state. It's to their benefit too. It's a good way for them to clear up their credit rating.
One more question. And these sections that it's referencing to in section 1, 42-23-065, I guess B4, is either that or the other sections here, are those the exemption, the 50% provision sections where they say that only 50% of the dividend is subject to execution except for child support, and there's a few other categories.
One of these does list the, and I don't know which one, and I guess we have Jeff Bush here from the Department of Law, and I'm sure he can tell you exactly what they are.
Yeah, it is. That's the same section.
Representative Swackhammer's bill. We had a committee substitute to amend this to say that it'd be a $100 exemption for execution, and it'd be consistent, it'd apply to everything. So the same problem is inherent in the taking the child support and the court-ordered restitutions, and the people just don't file for them if they know they're not going to get anything.
Anything else, Mr. Chairman? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Would like to testify on this bill.
Madam Chairman, my name is Becky Bear. I'm legislative liaison for the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. We support this bill. Our difficulties are a little bit different from Dr. Romsberg. In our area of occupational licensing, we have difficulty with people giving bad checks, checks that just do not clear, and refusing to clear up those checks. It's true that we can tell them their license is not in effect, but they still continue to have their license on the wall. They still continue to practice, and especially with the backup that there is in the AG's office, it just is not worth it to try and pursue each individual person who does this. The department loses several $1,000 a year on this, and the only time that we can really catch up with them is 2 to 4 years later when they come in to renew their license. Then we can ask them to clear it up, but we are writing off as bad debts several of these, and we have attempted previously to go through the permit fund, and the mechanism just isn't there. So we fully support this bill.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Jeff Bush, could you join us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very briefly, Jeff Bush with the Attorney General's Office. I have just two suggestions on this particular bill, and actually in reference to Representative Donnelly's question earlier, this bill applies to the general category of debts to state agencies, which is the last of the list of priorities where permanent fund an entire permanent fund dividend can be attached or garnished rather than the 50%. It comes after court order restitution and child support and those sorts of things. This is the general category of debts to state agencies. There are basically two suggestions I would have recommended, minor, very minor amendments. The first one is on line 13 on the first page, where it makes it at least arguably mandatory that this particular procedure be used by a state agency. I think it might be better to change the word is to may be accomplished in order to allow state agencies to use standard execution procedures should they choose to do so. And I don't see a reason why. Frequently, for example, the Department of Law has a judgment in its hand. It often even has writs of execution in their hands. It would be just as easy for us to deliver a writ of execution to the Department of Revenue as to go through this particular procedure. I would just think that the option can be left open that we would use standard, or that any state agency could use standard execution procedures in addition to this type of procedure. The other recommended change I would have is a clarification on the back page, which has to do with this hearing. When we saw this particular provision C here, the Department of Law's concern is that we may end up with a goodly number of hearings under the Administrative Procedures Act over relatively small amounts of money, permanent fund dividend amounts of money. I think the intent of the language is, but it can be made better, is to make sure that the hearing procedure is only on the validity of the claim made by the agency to the Department of Revenue. For example, the department has turned over the wrong individual's permanent fund dividend check. For example, if they get a name mixed up or they get a Social Security number mixed up. I don't think that this hearing should be available for the individual to have a second shot at contesting their particular debt. We've already given them the opportunity to contest the debt under Section A because the agency that makes the claim has to state that the debt is not contested, or if it has been contested, that the debt has been resolved in favor of the agency. If that has in fact occurred, then I think that the only thing the only due process requirement that would be left would be a challenge to the actual taking of the debt by the agency from the Department of Revenue, taking the claim of the permanent fund dividend, but not a challenge to the underlying debt, because that in fact gives the person an extra opportunity to challenge the underlying debt. I think we could run into an awful lot of situations where that would occur. And I would like to, if possible, preclude that. And I think that all we have to do is, and I haven't unfortunately come up with the exact language, but I think that when we talk about the hearing on line 10 and 11 on the second page, I think we could say that the substance of the hearing is may only be on the issue of the validity of the claim and not on the validity of the underlying debt. I think that some language to that effect would solve the problem.
Would you just say that one more time? A hearing on the validity of the
claim. The way the bill has been structured, they refer to claims, which is what the agency does to the Department of Revenue,
right,
and then they refer to debts, which is the underlying debt that the person owes to the agency in the first place. I think that if we say that the hearing, the subject of the hearing may only be on the issue of the validity of the claim and not on the validity of the underlying debt, was my suggestion.
That's
language.
Pretty straightforward. Senator Dillon, would you care to respond to that?
That'd be fine. We'd sort of like to get the bill through this year. That was the
that
only
was
thing. So
yeah,
if you want to put it on here and move it up to finance or let them put it on, I'm amenable to whatever.
That sentence makes sense to me, and I think it does what you want it to do. And I think if there isn't any objection, I would propose that we add that sentence to the section.
I don't
have
an objection. For Senator Ewing's, we work quick, we do this.
Okay, I don't know what your system is, so.
We passed it with the amendment, and it goes right on through.
Okay. I have no objection.
I think it would be quicker that way, since you said you
I just want to make sure that we can go out and collect that money for the next year, because we're otherwise we could lose $400,000 or $500,000.
I want to make it clear, the Department of Law does not want to stop the bill either. We are interested in moving the bill as well.
This is fine, so go ahead.
Okay.
Does that mean
one other question? The only other proposed language change then was on line 13 on the first page is to maybe.
Yes.
Okay, and there were no other proposed language changes?
No.
Okay, Representative Martin?
That's the other question, Madam Chairman. I have, and I want to say that if everybody's ready, I just want to make the motion that Senate Bill 227, Committee Substitute to State Affairs, has amended, so that's amended to pass out committee.
Was there anyone else who wanted to testify on this bill? Okay, I will just hold your motion pending the additional testimony. Thank you very much, Mr. Bush.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Urban Jones from the Department of Revenue. Just briefly, I'd like to say that the Department of Revenue thinks this is good legislation. We support the bill, and although we're going to do a little bit of work as a result, that we don't think that's going to impact us a great deal. Just one note that's been traveling with the bill is about $6,500. It's primarily to help process these additional claims, to pay for printing the claims and the postage for the claims, notices to be sent out to the applicants.
Any other language changes?
No, I agree with the language that was suggested. I think that's good. I've heard that from other agencies too, by the way.
Okay, very good. Representative Martin and then Senator Ewing.
I'm just going to say, I think the Department of Post Secondary would be more than glad because the money that they're going to save with the legal amounts that they go through now, the postage is down.
The RSA over some money from Post Secondary, the Department of Revenue. Senator Ewing, anything?
No, just briefly that in the State Affairs Committee over on the Senate side, we have went and took the recommendations of the Department of Revenue to come up with the proper language on the 10-day hearing procedure and so on. So we did work with them to get the proper committee substitute over there so that it was completely legal. And I think with Mr. Bush's amendments, it's fine.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Jones. Anyone else on Senate Bill 227? If not, then Representative Martin's motion is back on the table. If there is no objection, the bill moves. We will have a CS draft and we'll open the CS and get it out immediately.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, House Bill 267. Thank you all very much for your patience. Appreciate your willingness to sit through this very interesting hearing this afternoon. I hope you've been amused. Okay, who would like to be first on House Bill 267? John Williams, are you representing the administration on the bill?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've spoken with the prime sponsor of the legislation today, Representative Brown, and the press of this week of business was going to make it difficult for her to be here, and apparently she's found it not possible to be here. May I ask, have the members of the committee received the policy position paper of the department?
Well, we have, we did receive something from the department. I'm searching here for what's in our file. Thank you very much.
I believe that's a killing the committee, yeah. You're a biggie.
Oh, I know, what's happening? Okay, John, sorry, go ahead.
Madam Chair, the position paper has 3 points that it makes to support the change of a job classification in our department, known as development specialist, from the classified service to the partially exempt service. And the second page of the position paper identifies for you the fiscal 87 positions that are described as development specialists in the department plan. Next year, that number may be less, which is one of our arguments. And essentially, there are three arguments that we advance in support of this change. The first is that there is clearly some stress in the state right now, our worst recession since statehood, I think it's been described as. And the governor's priority has been to address the question of economic development. And he has advanced, for example, Trade Alaska as a mechanism to achieve that end. The Department of Commerce, and particularly our economic development offices, will be materially involved in that process and will thus have one additional taskmaster, and that is that program. I'm sure that there will also be substantial pressures on them to continue the activities that they're doing now, so it increases the scope of their activity level. The second argument is that because we need top people, it's difficult to from the private sector. It's the same argument that has been used in the case of petroleum geologists, for example. If we have a situation where we need a person who has knowledge of, for example, a worldly knowledge of mineral development and someone who is capable of dealing with companies who are prepared and financially able to do mineral development in the state, it's difficult to attract that person if you do not have the flexibility of being outside of the classified service to provide them with financial incentive. And the third argument basically is that with the chore to do more with less, the department would appreciate the maximum flexibility to do that, and including that flexibility would be the rights to decide who will fill a position, actually have a management say as to who will fill a position in the case of a decrease in the number of job classes in this job classification. As the situation currently exists, management has no say in that. Those decisions are made as a part of the bumping routine within the classified service. I was fortunate enough to have your staff provide me with comments from the Alaska Public Employees Association. And I did have a chance to talk with their executive director some weeks ago about this bill, and I advised her that we would be introducing it. I believe that that some of her arguments may be a little off target. The roles of this particular job class, while they have been in existence for 20 years, have changed dramatically, especially in the last 4 years. It's my recollection from being in the state for approaching that period of time, that the original development specialists in the Department of Commerce were pretty much resource information people who were on staff, who could be called upon to provide input to their department, to their division, but more importantly, probably to provide sort of an advisory role for their department, so that when members of industry came to them and asked them about where in state government you might find something or who they might talk to possibly set up a fish marketing business, for example, that those people would handle all sorts of public information requests. The perspective that we have for this job class today is one of much more technical expertise and perhaps a broader range of expertise also. As examples, the department could use immediately marketing expertise, somebody who's actually been involved in marketing goods and materials to the Far East, for example. Fisheries, timber, and minerals are all opportunities that the state has, economic opportunities that provide some expansion for our export business. We could use right now expertise, a strong expertise in resource economics with the elimination of the research analysis and support section from our department. Next fiscal year, there will be no economic expertise left to assist in these efforts. We could use financial modeling expertise. Again, that will be gone. That will be gone next fiscal year. I already mentioned to you the example of, for example, an international experience in minerals development and with minerals companies. As to the comments of APEA indicating that it has worked well, I think programmatically I've just provided you some examples where it won't work very well for us in the future. In the last 4 years, there have been situations where people with this job classification have taken public positions, somewhat in keeping with the responsibilities provided them by their supervisors, but inconsistent with the positions of their supervisors. And in fact, there is a person on the layoff status right now in this job class who would be the first hire in the event of any vacancies in these departments, who was a person who opposed the state's involvement in the development of the Red Dog project. If that's not a policy involvement, then I'm afraid I don't understand what a policy involvement is. I've also mentioned to you the difficulties associated with the layoff process. We have four specialties right now on staff. We'll have others that will be coming. With the layoff system the way it is, it's very conceivable that you would not end up with the particular skills that you need at that time if you have to rely upon the bumping system within the contracts. In that vein, it's difficult to perceive bringing all of those offices together into one office because of the difficulties associated with the layoff problem. We have fishery specialists now, forest specialists, mineral specialists, small business specialists. I've proposed other specialties we'd like to have. One of the fact that we have three offices now that have actually four, including the Division of Tourism. I don't mean to leave them out. Because we have separate offices, we can't avoid having vertical layoffs or vertical bumping rights in such a way that fisheries people might supplant a minerals person in the event that there was a vacancy. Our fear is that if we tried to do some sort of more efficient organization of those offices under a PX, or absent a PX strategy, we would have all the development specialists in one bumping order. I would also like to comment just for myself and the commissioner of our department that about the particular point number three in the APEA letter, which indicates that this is a political move. Nothing could be further from the truth. The intent of the commissioner and myself is to provide us in the department with the best staff, the best technical staff to address what we perceive to be very important issues. I've been an administrator of a state office before in which everyone was in the exempt service, and I guess put my reputation up as an example of good hiring practices at that point. And I feel the same about Commissioner Smith. Since you do have a quorum and you can do things like move legislation and propose amendments, given the week of the legislature that we're in, I do have one amendment I'd like to propose. On line two, delete the word House and insert the word Senate.
Pardon me? We don't have the authority to
make
that.
Make it quickie. Yeah. Good move.
I was hoping that might get the bill through a little quicker.
John, could I just ask a quick question about the number of PX positions in your department right now and how this fits into either the way in which those positions are classed or not classed now?
Sure. By statute, the commissioner, deputy commissioner, an assistant commissioner of PX, the directors, the deputy director of tourism, the deputy director of insurance. There is authority for one executive secretary in statute, which we utilize. There is authority and funding for a special assistant. We do not have authority for a second special assistant, which is available in many departments. For line agency functions, that's the extent of our PX positions at the current time. Special assistant that we could utilize in the commissioner's office here to help us with, for example, legislative liaison work, which we use for one of two departments that use classified service for that now. Our special assistant is in Anchorage, heading up the commissioner's office there and providing support functions to the commissioner for the up to 20 boards and commissions that he serves on, some of which are vitally important also for economic development in the state, ADA, ASBA, the railroad, and so, et cetera. The demands on the commissioner of commerce, for those of you who may not have looked at it in the past, are phenomenal in terms of the associated boards, commissions, and authorities that he serves on. And a good commissioner of commerce will do his absolute best to stay active in those programs because of their relative importance to the state, and our current commissioner is of that mind.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm concerned about this legislation for two reasons. One, I wonder if there's ever been a study done as to the length of service that an individual gives to the state of Alaska, depending on what classification they are in, if they're a member of APA, if they're partially exempt, or fully exempt. The reason being is that I agree with you, we need to keep our top talents available in the state. From my experience, it's not that APA is any angel either, but I feel that in the long run, that there's more security for qualified people who are under APA, and at least once they get the minimum time in, it's harder to get rid of them, whether they're good or bad, which I don't mind because I see a lot of good people getting exempt or harassed or pushed out or whatever thing, and we don't have an answer yet where they can take their grievances to because the administration fights it like mad. Leave APA alone on that one right now. But has there been a study? If you're worried about Alaska maintaining quality people, who is most successful in keeping them under what category?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of such a study. I think that a number of us, you included, Representative Martin, have been around here long enough to look at locations in state service where there are PX classifications, for example, the legislature. And you'll see a number of professional people who have been around here for a good long time. And I would be the first to confess that this is not a black and white issue. I mean, there are certainly aspects of the classified service that are beneficial to good government. And for the reasons that you've just stated, that's true. There are also aspects of classified service that make it difficult to be flexible enough to adjust to changing times and changing demands. And that's the concern that I bring to the table.
To elaborate on what I'm concerned about is that perhaps because we're a smaller state, it seems like that we have too much in political involvement with a person who may be extremely qualified in X service, and for some reason or other he or she gets moved because of the new administration and chances are we have new administrations every 4 years. We're lucky if we do it every 8 years and maybe things will stabilize. But I think when people are in the exempt service and partially exempt, they're very vulnerable in the state of the system. So let's throw that up as a caution. The way you made your presentation, I agree with, but I agree with that if they were in the classified service, that perhaps we keep them longer.
I'm under time constraint, Madam Chair, so I'll try to be brief and quick. I have a question for John as well as for APDA. It seems to me the key phrase in the position paper is to do more with less and part means maximum flexibility in staffing. What prevents you from having that kind of flexibility presently with APA staff or permanent employees?
Madam Chair, I apologize for my lack of experience with the people in the Division of Tourism. In my 2 month tenure with the department, I've not worked with them because they're not under my purview. So I'm not aware of those three persons. The people in the economic advocates section of our office, I think would best be described as generalists. They have some familiarity, perhaps some academic training in resource industries of their background. And they also have, obviously, to a great degree, they have good public relations skills in terms of meeting the public. And and under any organizational structure, we will need some of those people, and perhaps those people might appropriately be classified. However, we also need, and I mentioned that we, our research analysis and support section that supported those functions, the economists, the programmers, economic analysts, are gone now. We need to be able to introduce